Salutations, adventurous listeners. This is Weekly Advice from Everyday Experts, a podcast from hubpages.com in which we discuss really cool articles on our site written by various experts. And I'm Simone Smith. I'm sitting next to Marina Lazarevic, and we are talking about something particularly adventurous today, which is why I'm really in this traveler mood.
We are. We are going to discuss the history and symbolism of Tibetan Buddhist prayer flags.
Yeah, and this is written by Mel Bell, who's she's been on our site for 2 years. She's 124 hubs as of this recording, and she is a big time like world traveler. She writes about places she's been and places she wants to visit, so she does a lot of her research and then kind of just publishes it in article form. Mm-hmm. And she has some big time interest in going to the Himalayas, however you want to say it. So she wrote a bunch of interesting pieces on the area and traditions in the area, and Tibetan prayer flags are part of that. So I know in the Bay Area, a lot of people think that Tibetan prayer flags are like this cool thing that they can like put around because it looks all rugged and awesome.
Yeah, I've seen it in people's apartments as kind of a little decorative.
Yeah.
Wall ornament, yeah. But
I've also seen them in like documentaries where people go to the top of Everest.
Yes,
I was wondering,
as you were mentioning before the podcast began, Mount Meering.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a common place to see some prayer flags. What are prayer flags? Well, they're colorful strings of flags found in many parts of the Himalayas, especially in mountainous regions, like we mentioned Tibet, which is that large part of Western China, Nepal, Bhutan, and India. And it's part of Tibetan, Nepali, and Buddhist culture.
Yeah.
But it's also part of climber culture.
Yeah, which is how I found out about it. and that's because in movies and documentaries, because I don't do any climbing, I'm not that type. Climbers leave the flags at summits of the mountains, and Mel Bell explains that they're doing that so that the winds at the top of these mountains can send prayers and mantras to everyone.
Oh.
I know.
I
think
like
so cool. Yeah. I mean, and it makes sense. Like, at Everest, you would want to see prayer flags up there because they're going to blow all the good stuff in all directions because they're really high.
Yeah.
It's very practical.
It must feel awesome to when you accomplish a long climb and you see a prayer flag, you know someone put it there.
Yeah,
you know?
Like someone else made it.
When you're up just like so far away from, you know, other people and, you know, society, as you know, you're kind of up in this abyss, and you see this sort of memory of somebody else being at that spot.
And leaving really good intentions, too.
Exactly.
Which is awesome. And here's the myth, people commonly think that prayer flags are meant to carry prayers to the gods. And actually, they're just meant to bless the surrounding countryside and promote peace, strength, passion, and wisdom. So that, to me, the way I see them is they're kind of like mythological and religious air purifiers.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're just taking the air and applying their goodness and sending it on, and everyone's happy.
Yeah, they're just Febrezing the rest of us.
They are! Religious Febreze. That is really
cool. Hey, if all religion could come in the form of Febreze, I think we'd be
just
pretty
spray it on.
Happy and good smelling people.
Well, I'm working on that. The cool thing is that Tibetan prayer flags are, though associated with Buddhism, they're only associated with Tibetan Buddhism. They don't really mm-hmm. show up in any other part. So here's where you can really see the influence of a specific area applying itself to the Buddhist religion, which is one thing that kind of always, it throws me about Buddhism because there's so many different schools of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was raised in one, but it was really different from a bunch of other ones. So it's very interesting, and I'd love to delve into that further someday. But they are pretty sure that the flag thing came from Bon, which is a religion that predated Buddhism in Tibet. And basically, with that tradition, shamanistic Bonpo used plain flags in primary colors in healing ceremonies. So eventually, when Buddhism came to Tibet, they sort of applied Buddhist principles to mm-hmm. the flags, which they had before. It really reminds me of the way that Shinto kind of works alongside or next to Buddhism in Japan, and how that kind of influenced their version of Buddhism. It's very interesting.
Yes, it's definitely region based, and I thought it was interesting that, you know, it was used in a smaller kind of context, just specifically in healing ceremonies,
whereas
it's expanded to sort of cover
healing the air
and purifying the earth.
That's really cool.
Going back even farther, prayer flags have roots in India, where sutras were written on cloth.
Yeah, legend has it that Shakyamuni Buddha, who's basically the first guy to reach enlightenment, his prayers were written on prayer flags that were used by devas, who are basically benevolent supernatural beings, against their adversaries, who are known as the Asuras, which are basically sinful, materialistic, power-seeking deities, aka Americans! Just kidding.
Are we talking about like 500, 600 or so BC here?
We're talking about, oh gosh, when did Siddhartha Gautama... I can't remember when he lived. It was a really, really, really long time ago.
Yeah.
Super long time ago, before reality TV, although that's who I think that Asuras are. They're just... Yeah. Well, although it's all metaphorical anyway, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, they represent all the bad characteristics of us, and then the divas represent all the good characteristics of us, and the divas had those prayer flags, and hence they are awesome. So these sutra-adorned pieces of cloth were originally made in India.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently they knew about them in Tibet for about 200 years, and then eventually the technology to print text on cloth came to Tibet around 1040, which mm-hmm. is a really long time ago. And then they started actually making these prayer flags.
Well, if you think about it, India, it is, you know, on the border with China, but the region between Tibet and the Indian border is just like hella mountains. And people weren't really crossing, you know, in any...
Yeah, it was like, oh, we'll just stop by.
Yeah, so it's crazy that it took 200 years to get over there, but I'm not surprised that it was a slow path.
Well, I think that most people have our general perspective when it comes to, you know, mountains like that, whereas, you know, it's, I'm not crossing that. No. So only the really crazy ones probably tried to do that, and the ones that survived.
Yes.
Probably took them a while, so... Yeah, unfortunately, the more recent history for Tibetan prayer flags is a bit more sad. Not just because so many people sort of have them in gift shops now and don't really understand what they do, but also because China took control of Tibet in 1950 and has basically... The government has discouraged the use of prayer flags, and they're like, Tibetan culture is kind of getting
suppressed.
Yeah, like, that's not cool at all.
No, it's not. It's unfortunate. Tibet's such a large and beautiful region with so much history that it's sad to see these traditions kind of fade away and get regurgitated in weird commercial kind of context, like you said, seeing them in gift shops as opposed to seeing them in actual practice.
I mean, China, you're cool, but let's
come on, China. Come on, loosen
let's
up.
Let's all get along.
Loosen up. Let's start with the prayer flags. You'll see they're not that bad.
Yeah.
All right, but
let's keep the tradition alive, right?
Let's do
it. So, I mean, if you see some prayer flags in a gift shop, maybe you could rescue them and use them the right way and spread the word, and then maybe that tradition won't die out. So,
yes.
How to hang prayer flags.
Apparently the date is important. You can't just wake up any day and be like, I'm gonna hang some prayer flags.
Yeah.
Well, you shouldn't if it's a big thunderstorm, apparently.
Yeah, stormy, bad days.
Morning,
not a good idea.
Morning, sunny days are good.
And windy days.
Windy days.
Then, you know, extra action.
Ah, yes, yeah. Yes.
For the air purifying, air for breathing.
A good astrological day.
Yeah,
also
and
suggested.
I tried to. Mel Bell mentioned this in her article. Some other articles about prayer flags mentioned this. No one really refers to, like, okay, so what's a good astrological day? So maybe you'll have to turn to your local Tibetan Buddhist and be like, hey, dude.
Oh,
what
I thought
are some
it,
good days.
See, when I saw that, I was like, does that mean I turn to my horoscope page in some magazine and it gives you those numbers and says, these are your days and every
maybe month. That will work. You know what? I mean, in a pinch, I think, you know, we can open up Cosmo and turn to the back page and, well, I mean, it's all about good intentions, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, I figure, you know, but just keep it in mind. And also, you can't just leave them up forever. It's kind of a good idea to replace the old flags with some new ones after the Tibetan New Year. And I love how the whole process is really metaphorical of the way that life has its cycles, and all beings are part of a greater ongoing cycle, and we're all going to die someday, but it's okay because there's going to be another one to take our place. So
so you mean as the flags fade, their prayers become part of the universe?
Yeah, and then I'll just think, and then you replace them.
And then
the
you replace them and yeah. Keep continuing the cycle.
It's beautiful.
It's very Buddhist.
Ah, Buddhism. And what do you do with these old prayer flags?
Well, you treat them with RESPECT.
That is all
you,
that really
you shouldn't
matters.
Place them on the ground or use them in clothing. And you
yeah,
should...
that would be pretty bad, like sew it into a sweatshirt. And see, that's the thing, is like I'm always concerned when I see like amazing like characters and like religious symbols like put into clothing, because I know that it means a lot to some people, and even though it looks kind of cool and fashionable, I'm like, oh crap, like
it's my Buddhist prayer flag, yo.
Yeah.
My sweatshirt.
Burn them.
Burning them to discard them. Yeah. Old ones. Yes.
Yeah. That's and hey, we like burning stuff.
We do. We do enjoy burning things.
we can burn Tibetan prayer flags.
If you have any that have finished their cycles, please send them our way.
Yeah. Then we can also roast marshmallows as well. Well, you know, properly discarding of faith.
While purifying ourselves.
Yeah, I think that sounds good to me. Let's talk about the colors and designs and meanings, because those are super interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because it started out with those primary colors way back in the old days before prayer flags were really prayer flags, and then those Indian sutras were added. Mm-hmm. They got super semiotically interesting. So let's start with the two major types of prayer flags. Most of us are very familiar with the Lungta prayer flags, which come in those strings of several
squares,
flags.
Right?
Yep. And then there are also the Darchor prayer flags. So those are just one large, long, rectangular piece of cloth that's hung like sort of along a flagpole, but lengthwise. So it's more like those like Japanese style flags instead of like American flags.
I was just going to say it's the opposite of how the American flags are kind of more horizontal.
Yeah, so but not American style.
Those I have not seen as much. But
yeah,
the
I
long
think they
top...
only really show up in really Tibetan areas. And they're specifically known for carrying wishes of longevity, fortune, health, and money. So maybe they should make their way over here. They could use some.
I could certainly use some as well. But the Lungta is the one that we have seen probably more often. And it consists of multiple square pieces of fabric that are strung along a cloth, and they're often strung in diagonal line along monasteries, stupas, and mountain passes. Frequently, they come in strings of five flags, one in each color, to bring harmony through a balance of the elements, which was, I think, where we were going with this earlier. All the colors are a metaphor for a different element of life.
It's all tying back. Yeah, blue is the sky.
White is the wind.
Red is fire.
Green is water.
And yellow is earth.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I like that. That's very cool. And in the center of the flag, you will see the Lungta, the very strong wild horse, bearing three flaming jewels on its back. And the jewels themselves do actually symbolize things. Big surprise! One being the Buddha, one being the Dharma, which is Buddhist teachings, and the third being the Sangha, which is the Buddhist community. So we've got all these nice little things and the horsey.
And the horse symbolizes speed and turning bad fortune into good fortune.
Which I'm all for.
Yes.
All for. Yeah, I guess there's the purifying element, kind of like the filter in your air purifier. And then on the corners of the flags are even more things. They are often adorned with four animals. They are also known as the four dignities. So
yes.
There's a dragon and a Garuda, which is a large mythical bird-like creature. Google image that, dudes, because it's really interesting looking. And there's also a tiger and a snow lion, and we know how those look.
Yes.
Yep.
I'm going to say those are strong animal picks.
Yeah, they are.
Without having seen a Garuda, which I certainly will Google
you
after this.
You gotta look it up. They're awesome. I mean, although I wouldn't want to come into
bird-like, that just, yeah, so much potential. But
yeah.
Those are the Lungtas.
Yeah, and then of course there's the mantras that are on all these prayer flags, at least ever since the, you know, Indian printing on fabric technique came to Tibet.
Yes.
So there are pretty much every mantra is going to be a version of around 400 traditional mantras that are dedicated to different deities. Some include prayers for the long life and good fortune of the person who mounts them, which I bet is pretty prevalent on these mountain passes where you are extra likely to die a terrible and painful death.
Yes.
But I kind of like the main purpose of prayer flags, which is just to be good to everyone.
Yes. Bring about good fortunes, purify us of all the bad things.
Yeah.
Keep the cycle going.
Yeah.
And they're pretty.
They're really pretty. They're totally pretty. And to me, like, it's learning about this whole process seemed a little bit foreign, even though a lot of its principles are very basic. But then I remembered, have you ever wished on like a dandelion before?
Oh, of course.
What are they called? Like wishing weeds or dandelion?
Yeah, dandelion. I remember, you know, and then you blow at it. And
then like your wish just scatters away in the winds. And I think that prayer flags are really the same thing. And once I realized that, I was like, well, yeah, we're all doing the same thing, but calling it different stuff and using slightly different tools.
It's true.
Yeah, which is exciting. So I hope that all of you learned something new from this, and that if you have Tibetan prayer flags, now you know how to properly put them up and exactly what they're for, which is something more than just looking cool, so total bonus! You didn't realize that when you bought them, I bet.
Yes. Spread the good karma with the prayer flags.
Yeah, I'm all for that. So really, really cool. And if you have prayer flags or have ever seen them somewhere, or if you have something for your own personal religion that does something similar, I'm really curious to know about it personally, but I bet all of us are too.
Even if it's not religion-based.
Yeah, anything that's just, does the same thing that prayer flags do, like a dandelion.
Exactly, like Simone's example.
Yeah, if you can think of anything like that, tell us about it, because those things are also really cool.
Do let us know.
Yeah, our email is podcast@hubpages.com. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd also love any other feedback or ideas for future podcasts. So until we meet again, have fun purifying the world.